welcome to the jungle. A very good Tuesday to you. My name is Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California in the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Nice to be here. Let me tell you about the program. We are loaded. Lots of football to talk about today. A lot of SoCal football. Of course, I'm going to break down what I saw last night. That was a vicious game, a violent game. We know the NFL is violent, but how much is too much? I'll break that down for you. Telephone number in the meantime is toll-free. If you want to jump in, go ahead. 1-800-636-8686. Start dialing right now. I do want to caution, I've got an interview coming up next segment. So if you don't want to wait and you don't want to get on hold, just wait until the interview is over. But if you want to jump in early, go ahead. Once again, toll-free in the U.S., in Canada, wherever you can hear us, 1-800-636-8686. You can follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. By now, you probably know those are the three best ways to participate and interact with the program. In terms of the interviews, coming up next segment, the head coach of the L.A. Chargers, Anthony Lynn. We're talking SoCal football on the program today. Anthony Lynn joins me at 20 past. We're about 15 minutes from right now. Looking ahead to hour number two, the head basketball coach at Arizona State, Bobby Hurley. In hour number three, I did mention, we're talking SoCal football. Mark Barron, a linebacker for the L.A. Rams. The Rams and Chargers are both playing great right now. And I am in Southern California. We're talking SoCal football. You have your telephone number. Get at it. I don't want to waste any time. Let's go right to last night's game. There have been some bad primetime games this year. Some really bad games. But last night's Steelers-Bengal game was the worst. And I'm not talking about the fact that the Bengals managed to blow a 17-point lead, which you know I'll get to later on. Instead, I'm talking about the ugliness and the violence in that game. That was as bad and as dangerous a game as I think I've ever seen in my life. Two guys carted off on boards, one headshot after another. I've never seen a game like that. But who am I to say? Why not take it from somebody who played the game at the highest level? Troy Aikman. Troy Aikman tweeted, "This game is hard to watch. For a number of reasons. Terrible for the NFL and the game of football overall," end quote. Mike Freeman is somebody you've heard on the show a number of times. He's covered the NFL for a long time. He called it, quote, "one of the ugliest, scariest games I have ever seen," end quote. Fact is, I cannot disagree because, again, off the top of my head, I can't think of a scarier game that I've ever seen. Now, everybody knows the history and the bad blood between these two teams. The Carson Palmer injury, the Hines Ward block, the ugly playoff game from last January. This, though, was worse than all of that. Let's start with the Ryan Shazier injury, which was among the scarier moments in recent NFL history.
Shotgun snap. He has a pass down the middle. It's a short one. It was grabbed on a cross in stride at the 20-yard line and grabbed by Josh Malone. He was hit by the linebacker, Bud Dupree. There's a player down for Pittsburgh. The game was to the 17-yard line.
You know, I think it's Ryan Shazier.
It is.
He makes the tackle, and he leads with his helmet. And it's the crown of his helmet that hits the, I think it looked like the ribs of the Bengal tight end. Well, I'll tell you what, that was not a pretty hit. Well, you know, I see him moving his arms. There's no question about that, moving his hands. I still have not seen him move his legs. I know he grabbed at his lower back right as he got finished with the tackle. And they want to be obviously uber careful, taking him off. They don't want to injure anything else and make anything worse than it already is. And he is certainly in bad shape right now.
My man Boomer Esiason for Westwood One. Unlike pretty much everything that followed, that was a football play. Shazier was attempting to make a tackle. He suffered a serious back injury. He immediately grabbed for his lower back, was eventually strapped to a board, and then carted off the field. Reportedly without feeling in his lower extremities. Terrifying moment. Every player on the field, everybody in the stands, everybody watching at home was shaken by that. Steeler Vince Williams became very emotional, and that was completely understandable. The game, of course, continued, and somehow the players were able to compartmentalize and continue playing, which I've never really understood, but they did. Not only did they compartmentalize it, they seemed to completely forget about it because then there was one dangerous hit after another. George Iloka on Antonio Brown on a ball that Brown didn't even attempt to catch. one guy after another, smashing into each other. It seemed like every single hit was an attempt to send a message. I get it. It's a rivalry, and there are guys with long memories and short fuses. But in the fourth quarter, things got even worse, like this.
Roethlisberger, second down, 10 of his 40. He's flanked by the running back, Bell. The shotgun snap, the drop back at three. He looks down the field. He shuffles. He throws a short pass, a sidearm throw. It's a short pass, and it's caught by Bell at the 45. Drilled on the numbers at the 50. Flags are thrown. He takes it into Cincinnati territory. Running on the painted numbers in front of the Bengal bench here below us. A 12-yard catch and run, but flags all over the field where the contact occurred.
I'll tell you, this is Juju Smith-Schuster just laid out Vontaze Burfict. He's going to be a hero in the Pittsburgh Steelers locker room when they watch this film.
Uh-oh.
Because Vontaze Burfict is not a very well-liked person in Pittsburgh, of course. This is a direct hit, and I think they're trying to keep these hits out of the game. There is a conference between the officials. This could be a defensive player hit. You normally don't see these things, but you could understand why they would call it.
You don't see that very often, do you? A wide receiver laying out a linebacker like that. Juju Smith-Schuster flattening Vontaze Burfict with a devastating block and then standing over him, and was flagged for the hit and for taunting. Burfict left the game on a cart. And then it was Iloka again on Antonio Brown's touchdown.
Roethlisberger first and goal at the 6. 10th play of the drive. Flanked by a back and 3 wide. Shotgun snap, cocks his right arm, throws a pass in the end zone. Leaping, two-handed, falling down, backpedaling catch. Touchdown, Brown. Flags thrown. 6-yard strike. He took a wallop.
It's amazing that Antonio Brown held on to that ball. I mean, when I saw that play, the second he made that play, all I could think is this dude is out of his mind. I'm not sure I've ever seen a better receiver. And I don't want to overreact to the moment, but I'm not sure I've ever seen a better or tougher receiver. I have no idea how he held on to that ball after that shot that he took from Iloka. Two guys, but at that point, again, what are we talking about here? Great play, but there's a big but. Two guys have already been strapped to boards and taken away, and you're looking to land that kind of shot and get one or two more guys on boards. After everything had happened, he came in and went hat-to-hat with Antonio Brown as well. And what you don't want to do is come in here right now and say, this is just classic football. What's next? Putting flags on guys? Don't come in here with that argument, because this is not what that was. I'm all in favor of physical football. Also, don't come in here and tell me that's simply AFC North football. Look, I get it. You want to play a physical brand of football, especially against a rival. But that wasn't physical football. That was scary. That was violent. That was borderline disturbing. I'm not saying I got to this point, but have you ever, and who amongst us, especially who listening, does not love football, does not love the NFL, have you ever once watched an NFL game and thought, damn, I mean, I don't know, man, this might be too much. This might be too much. This is borderline disturbing. Have you ever had that thought? I mean, maybe not. Maybe you watched that last night and thought that was the best thing you've ever seen. I'm here to tell you, that's the first time in my entire life of watching football where I thought to myself, this really is borderline disturbing. These guys are coming in and going hat to hat, and they're doing it intentionally now. Big hits, great. I want to be very clear about this. Don't get this twisted. Big hits are awesome. Great. Guys getting strapped to boards and carted off, not good. We should be talking about football, not getting updates from hospitals about whether or not a player has feeling in all of his limbs, about whether or not a player is going to be able to walk again. Now, for his part, Juju Smith-Schuster apologized after the game.
I didn't know it was perfect at first. All I saw was the first Bengals dude that was in the tackle lay down. So in my instinct, I got a block from my teammate, and me just playing ball, I hit him. After I seen the replay, I think I should have held back a little bit more and just, from blocking him. I also believe that that's not me. I should never stood over him. I apologize for that. And
it's called with that, karma.
With that being said,
it's called
I hope
karma.
He gets better.
How about that? Isn't that something? So you've got Juju saying that I didn't know it was perfect, and now that I've seen it, I got to apologize. I should not have done that. I should not have stood over him. That was Antonio Brown in the background. And Antonio's not having any of it. Antonio, who has been on the wrong end of perfect cheap shots, was not feeling so charitable. You heard him in the background reportedly or repeatedly saying the word karma. Karma. So Juju is trying to own it, trying to apologize, trying to say that he should not have stood over Perfect. But there's Antonio Brown saying, karma, karma.
Karma.
That's not me. You
know, it's called karma.
I apologize for that. And
it's called with karma.
With that being said,
it's called karma. Karma.
He's being real clear about that, isn't he? So when asked if that was about Perfect, Antonio Brown said, quote, I ain't talking about nobody. Karma is karma. Karma is life. You do the wrong things, you get the wrong things out of it, end quote. And then when asked about the Iloka hit, Brown said, quote, the guy just left his feet and hit me in the head. Karma for him, too. Karma, end quote. This is, as you may know, a huge Antonio Brown house. I love the guy. I love the guy. I love his game. I love his attitude. And again, he might be the best and toughest receiver I've ever seen. Period. I mean, I love the guy that much, but I don't love that. Because if the take is that's karma and what goes around comes around, then nothing's ever going to change. And it has to. I mean, granted, in Brown's defense, I have not been cheap-shotted by Perfect or witnessed my teammates getting cheap-shotted by him. And I was not on the receiving end of that vicious headshot from Iloka that Antonio Brown was. But saying karma after a guy's been strapped to a board and carted off is not the best thing. It's not a good thing. And neither is standing over a guy after it looks like you put him to sleep, maybe for good. So what I'm saying is, it's an ugly end to an ugly, ugly game. And the league and its players have got to do everything they can to minimize headshots. I know they're trying, but they should be. It's probably impossible to take them out of the game altogether. The sport's always going to be violent, and players will always know what they're signing up for. But you have to do even more to try to minimize the number of shots to the head. I mean, that got out of control last night. That was ugly. Ugly. And believe me, I'm not here to hate. I love the NFL. But that was ugly and dangerous and violent and really borderline disturbing. Where do you come out on this? 1-800-636-8686. This guy answers my question. At GreatBludini4, he tweets, last night I finally started asking myself if I really want to be watching football. A Monday Night Football nail-biter, and I felt gross, empty, and sad when it was over. I mean, have you ever felt that way watching a football game before? Don't get me wrong. Come Thursday, I'll be ready to do this thing again. However, for the first time, I got to say, how much is too much? I mean, we're over the line now. At Table Slam Fam tweeted, last night is the kind of night that makes me want to stop watching the sport. And I guarantee these are not borderline fans who are saying this. And people were like, yeah, oh, it's Monday. Is there a football game or something on tonight? We're talking about hardcore fans that even are saying or thinking, that was borderline disturbing. I think I might change the channel. Have you ever once watched a football game? I mean, you change the channel on a bad game or if your team is getting its lights turned out. But have you ever once changed the channel of a football game because you thought it was too violent? No, that's why you watch it, because suckers get lit up. All right, your thoughts on that? Telephone number is toll free. You know it. When we come back, L.A. Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn joins us.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
You're efforting Anthony Lynn, the head coach of the LA Chargers. We'll have that for you momentarily. In addition to last night's game, I do want to talk about the game itself. I think it was more important to talk about what happened in that game, but I do want to talk about the game. Because it was Cincinnati in prime time against the Steelers, so of course it ended very badly for them. It always does. They had a 17-0 lead in a game they had to have against their rival, and they still came from ahead and melted down. Also, I want to talk about the Ball family. Over the past year or so, I've done my very best, my absolute best, to avoid talking about LeVar Ball. And there have been a lot of reasons for that. But after pulling his kid out of UCLA, I do want to get into this right now. Not right now, but I will get into it and not avoid it altogether. I want to talk about the New York Giants situation. Ben McAdoo is out. Jerry Reese is out. Looks like Eli Manning is back. Hey, listen, let me be very clear about this. Personal appearance is not show fodder. It's just not. It's never going to be. I'm not going to have you coming in here and bringing me down, cracking on how overweight people are, or how jacked up their dental work is, et cetera, et cetera. But I do have to say this. I can't get over this guy's look, Ben McAdoo. I mean, honestly, I cannot get over this guy's look. My man, you are in a major market, arguably the most important market, making good jack. There are plenty of people that can help you out, advise you on how to show up and not show out. I mean, give him this. The guy would kill in the Kurt Orban test. But I don't think anybody suggested that he dump a bunch of 40 weight into his lettuce. This guy's look, man. Unbelievable. I'll have that for you later on. But personal appearances are not show fodder, and they never will be. But I'm going to talk about why how a guy looks is important, especially in that town and in that market. Bad news for you Chiefs fans. You and your team are not skating. You're not ducking this one. I know you think because it's Tuesday and I didn't get around to the hammer yesterday that I'm just going to move on and let it slide. But I'm not. You're still looking at a full-blown, radioactive, nuclear meltdown going down in KC. And just because I didn't get to it yesterday doesn't mean that I'm not going to get to it, because I will. Same thing with the Vikings. Something amazing is going on with them right now. Just because I did not get to it yesterday does not mean that I'm not going to get to it today, because I will. Heisman Trophy ceremony is coming up, and we know the finalists. Baker Mayfield's going to win this thing. We know this already. However, he's got a big game coming up too, and Georgia fans gone all Georgia fan with it. You know, I don't know. I mean, he's done some things that have been pretty regrettable. He's done some things that were not nearly as bad as people made them out to be. But the one thing is, I don't think that you want to poke that bear. I don't think you want to give this guy any fuel. He is a huge fuel guy. You should know this about him by now. And Georgia fan did give him some. That's coming up later on. We're coming down to the end of another year. So I want to run down very quickly the jungle calendar for you between now and the end of the year. So all of that still ahead. 1-800-636-8686. This is how it's shaping up. Lots to cover. Anthony Lynn's going to come up momentarily. And on top of that, I've got some other things to get to, too. In the meantime, we are joined right now by the head coach of the LA Chargers, Anthony Lynn. Certainly better late than never. He is in his first season with the Chargers. LA beat Cleveland 19-10 on Sunday. They have won three straight. They won 6 out of 8. They're tied for first in the AFC West, and the Redskins are at LA on Sunday. That is a CBS game, 4:05 p.m. Eastern. Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn is my guest. Anthony, it's so good to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Jim. Good to be back, brother.
Good to have you back. Thanks so much, Coach. It is December. You've won three straight. You're tied for first in the division. You know, from the outside, it seems like you personally never had a doubt that you would get to this spot this season. Is it true, and how does it feel that you're there right now?
Yeah, you know, it's true. Yeah, we started out pretty rough, but we had a lot of football left in front of us. And you know, this team never lost focus, never lost faith, you know, stay committed to one another. And, you know, we always believe that, you know, we play meaningful football in December. And right now it feels good. It feels good to be in the hunt. You know, we're not out by any means. We have the hole that we dug, but, you know, we are in the hunt. So
you are in the hunt. You're right where you need to be. Now, I had Philip Rivers on the show recently. He gave you a ton of credit for the turnaround and your ability to keep the team together after that rough start. So what was your message at that time, and then how did you go about keeping everybody together?
You know, I always, you know, football to me is a relational sport, and I've always tried to relate football to life, and sometimes in life things don't go your way, and you can play the stock market and things don't go your way. It goes up and down, you know, peaks and valleys, and we just happen to be in a valley, you know, early on in our season, and you know, you don't just abandon ship, you know, you don't just quit, you fight you for what you believe in, you fight for one another. And, you know, and I just give credit to these guys. You know, they trust each other. They play for each other. And they don't want to let each other down. And so, you know, they show up every day. You know what you're going to get from them. And I just knew it was a matter of time for the ball to start bouncing our way. And we started executing and doing things right.
LA Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn joins us. You know, can we talk about that specifically for a minute? As an example, a lot of teams might spend time on sports psychology and the mental side of things in the offseason, but it's something that you continue to develop on a monthly basis throughout the regular season. What's the thinking behind that, and what are some of the attributes that you're looking for to develop specifically?
Well, I just really believe in, you know, in this league, you know, with these elite athletes and organizations, that, you know, it's sometimes the little things that make the biggest differences. And I just think the teams at the end that are holding that Lombardi Trophy, that there's a certain level of trust that they have for one another with the coaching staff, the organization, the ownership, and each other. And we really worked on establishing that this off season, and we just continue to do it, you know, every once a month during the season. And I just, this team is very close, and you know, regardless of what we do and what we accomplish, you know, I think we're setting the foundation and the culture for years to come. And I think, you know, winning 6 out of the last 8, I think it's starting to show a little bit.
Anthony Lynn's my guest. You know, speaking of Rivers, let me go back to him. To me, he's one of the most fascinating guys in the league when it comes to his drive and his motivation. As you've spent more time around him, what have you learned through the course of this season that maybe you didn't know even a few months back?
You know, I knew a lot about him, Jim, coming in, you know, and playing against him so many times. And I just knew that he grew up in a coaching household. You know, his father was a Hall of Fame coach, and Philip approaches the field every day in his preparation, you know, like a Hall of Fame quarterback. You know, he's that extended version of you on the football field, and he understands what it takes to win in this league. And I have never been around an athlete more prepared, and that he wears that on his sleeve, and I understand that. You know, there's some times on the sidelines where we have some intense conversations, and I'm okay with that, because you know we have that trust, you know, in each other. We don't take it personal, and so we like to call it a little healthy conflict. But I love his emotions. I love his fire, and I think it was making him Philip Rivers.
Yeah, speaking of trust, he's got an immense amount of trust in Keenan Allen. On Sunday, Keenan Allen became the first player in league history to record 10-plus catches and 100-plus receiving yards in at least one touchdown 3 straight games. Now, Anthony, you've been around the game a long time. You've seen your share of great receivers, including playing with Jerry Rice. So what do you make of what you're seeing from Allen right now?
You know, it's just it's just a beautiful thing to see him and Phil develop this chemistry with one another. And, you know, Keenan didn't play a lot last year. He got hurt in that first game. And now you're starting to see those two on the field together and the chemistry that they have for one another. Phil knows when he's indicating stepping, when he's making a move. And, I mean, the ball's in the right place at the right time. There are some times he's not even open, and Phil just throws him open. So that's nice to see, that type of chemistry between a receiver and a quarterback. And it's taking some time, but it's you know, what they're doing right now is pretty special. And I had no idea that Keenan had set that record last week. And like you say, I would have thought Jerry Rice was on that a long time ago. But, you know, Rod Smith, you know, but, you know, that was a nice accomplishment by those two.
Some amazing receivers, but that record is his. You know, I spoke also to Casey Hayward not long ago, and he, of course, played in Sunday's game after going home to spend time with his family after the passing of his brother. As a head coach, how do you go about helping a player deal with a tragedy like that? Because I know there's no playbook for that.
No, you know, it's just, that was tough, man. And I just wanted Casey to know, and everybody on his team, let him know that we're here for him. And we wanted him to go home and be with his family and just mourn with his family and just know that, you know, we got this. Whether you make it back or not, brother, we got this. But, you know, he wanted to come back. He wanted to be here with us and play for his teammates. And he went out and he couldn't play. He could have done a better job. I mean, we put him on the Josh Gordon, who looks like he hasn't missed a beat, you know, and Casey covered him all day and made some plays, and it was just great to have him back, and we just wanted him to know that you lost a brother, but you also have 63 other brothers here, you know, in Costa Mesa, so it's good to have him.
You know, you mentioned Josh Gordon, Anthony. This guy is incredible. I don't know how you missed that amount. A freak, right? In a league of freaks, this is one of the freakiest guys I've ever seen. What's that say about him that he could just show up after missing that much time and still be that dangerous?
Man, I hope for his sake that, you know, he learned a lot from his mistakes and that he's ready to move on and be a professional in this league, because he's already special, but he's going to be real special. I mean, the man hadn't been on the football field in 3 years, and it looked like he's been there every single day. And so that was just impressive.
Last thought, you know, when you're at this point of the season, I know you don't want to spend too much time looking back. And you've said that you've got a 24-hour rule when it comes to games, but the loss to Jacksonville took you more than...
Don't bring that one up, Jim.
You know, I'm trying not to. Coach. But, I mean, 72 hours, that's not like you. That's not like you. Why 72 hours? Like, why was that so significant? But, and why I do bring this up, how did that impact things going forward?
You know, I think it, hopefully in a positive way, it's just after that game, you know, and we were playing some good ball before that. It's just after that game, that's not the type of team that I want to have. And then, you know, we had better character than that. We were smarter than that. And we just, that game, for whatever reason, you know, we made some bad decisions at the wrong time. And moving forward, you know, we had a heart-to-heart in that locker room after that game. We had a heart-to-heart the very next week. And I just let some guys know that those things were going to change. And I had to make a couple moves, and I didn't announce it to the public, but I made some in-house moves, and it shook some things up a little bit. But that just I never lost a game like that before in my life, and that just kind of shook me up a little bit, and it kind of woke me up a little bit too. So, you know, you emphasize things over and over, and at some point you got to start getting what you emphasize.
Chargers have won 3 straight, 6 of 8. They're tied for first in the AFC West. They are at home on Sunday against Washington. Their head coach, Anthony Lynn, my guest. Anthony, great to have you back. Appreciate you.
Good to be back.
Always good to have you on. Coach, thanks so much.
All right, Jim.
Talk to you soon. Anthony Lynn, he's done an amazing job with that team, hasn't he? When they were 0-4 and everybody was piling on and saying, here we go again, same old Chargers. Look at the NFL. Look what they did. They brought a team to L.A. that nobody wanted. They're playing in a little soccer stadium. They've got opposing fans who fill that joint every single week. Look at this. Look at them. Man, they could have cratered. They should have cratered. They should have packed it in and just laid down and looked for a place to die, honestly. But they didn't. And I think, and Philip Rivers said this, one of the biggest reasons, if not the biggest reasons, that guy right there, the head coach, Anthony Lynn, he kept it all together, kept guys believing, stayed the course. Not only have they come back from 0-4, only one team in the history of the league has ever made the playoffs after starting 0-4, the same Chargers. Not only that, but they're chasing a team that started 5-0, and they ran them down. They're an amazing story. Not only could they make the playoffs, they could host a game in that same soccer stadium, which would be one of the greatest stories ever. Chiefs fan probably doesn't think so. Raider fan probably doesn't think so. So now the AFC West, which plenty will call the worst division in football, is far and away the most fascinating division in football. Can't get enough. And the Chargers have some crazy jungle karma right now. KC's got none. If you want to talk karma, there's Antonio Brown's karma, and then there's just jungle karma, football karma. The Chiefs have none right now. All right, when we come back, I'm going to open it up to you. 1-800-636-8686. My thanks to Anthony Lynn and the LA Chargers. Time now for a sports update. Better late than never. Here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Show me your lightning bolt. Always want to weigh in and check with San Diego Charger fan. How you feeling now? You were all too happy when they got off to that bad start. Couldn't wait to pile on. And I'm not here to crack on San Diego Charger fan because I understand where you're coming from. I know why you were bent. I know why you were so upset. The team got ripped from you. You love that team. You supported that team. You were down on management. I get it. I'm not even saying you're wrong. I get it. Period. I get it. But when they got off to that bad start, you couldn't have celebrated that any harder. Now they're playing great. Now they're one of the great stories in the NFL. How do you feel now? Can you get beyond what you think was done to you, and can you support that team? Can you enjoy what they're doing? They're great. I love the way they're doing it. Can you get beyond the problem you have with ownership, or is that just never going to change? It's too bad, too. I mean, if you've lived and died with that team, and all of a sudden now they're in first, and they're battling KC and the Raiders, it's exactly what you want, except you don't want them doing it in a town you hate when you feel like you got stabbed in the back. So I guess what I'm saying, San Diego, all my listeners on 1090 AM, where do you come out now? Is it making you more enraged, or are you kind of starting to let it go? Can you get with the guys? It's not the players' fault. The players had nothing to do with the decision. You want to sign up and be an O Rewards member today and start earning instantly. O Rewards members earn $5 back for every $150 they spend. It is fast. It's easy. It's free. It's only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Hurry in. Sign up. Start earning each and every time you shop. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Let's see how busy a day it's been. Normally, I start Tuesday with Podcast Tuesday. Didn't even mention it. Totally went right by me. It is Podcast Tuesday. Not only Podcast Tuesday, but I've got Gary Vaynerchuk as my guest. And Gary V is going to join me from Sweden. Because, of course, he is. He's Gary V. There was no way Gary V was going to be in New York or LA to do this. Gary V is always on a jet or a plane going somewhere overseas. So Gary V is going to join me. We've got about a half hour conversation. He joins me from Sweden. If you know Gary V, you know you don't want to miss that. If you don't know him or haven't heard him, you definitely want to hear it. He's got a kick in the ass for you. This email reads, "Dear Jumpman, instead of getting to your Chiefs take, could you please spend a little more time on Ben McAdoo's hair? And while you're at it, Bruce Arians wears a goofy hat. And Mike Zimmer's glasses look stupid. Delangly yours, Phil in Missouri." Of course, Phil, you're in Missouri. You don't want me going to the Chiefs take. First of all, Bruce Arians wears an awesome hat. And get off Mike Zimmer's specs. The guy's had 8 eye surgeries, Phil. That's why he wears those specs. You ever stop to think for 1 second why he might be wearing those glasses? Because he's had 8 eye surgeries, like in the last 8 months. Bad take, Phil. Bad take. And I'll get to your team. Trust me. But I probably should finish the thought on McAdoo. Because I want to let you know where I'm going with that. This is not Romageddon all over again. This does not mean that it's okay for you to crack on how people look. Again, we're not doing that. My point about McAdoo, now that he's out especially, is I just can't get over this guy's look. And how you look matters to a certain extent. It just does. Why do you think a guy like Rob Ryan was never going to get a head coaching job? Because of the way he presented himself. Because of his look. And because of the way he coached, obviously. But that guy never had a shot. Because of the way he looked. So you get McAdoo. And how you look, and especially fronting that team in that market, is important. I mean, I have no idea how that guy showed up like that. Like I said, he would kill in the Kurt Orban test. It looks like he hits his dome with 3 quarts every single day. Which isn't much worse, though, than him rocking the worst-fitting suit ever at an introductory presser. Have you forgotten about that, too? If so, go back and look. If you're Bill Belichick, you can dress any way you want. But if you're Ben McAdoo, coaching the New York Giants, you probably don't want to be dumping motor oil into your lettuce and gearing up in a clown suit every single day. And the weird thing is, dude actually did experiment with different looks. When he showed up, he wasn't going with 1040 in his lettuce. Go back and look at the opening presser. He had that horrible bowl cut for most of last year. And then he went with that low-rent villain with the slick back lettuce look this year. Also, you don't just stumble into that dumb, enormous windbreaker that he liked to rock, too. That was a choice. A bad choice, but a choice nonetheless. What I'm saying is you got to work pretty hard to have that bad of a look, that bad of a haircut, that bad of a wardrobe. And if you can't find a suit that fits in New York City, and it's impossible not to, it's New York City. If you can't, then just show up and wear a Giants polo. Hell, wear a jersey. That would have been a better look than going all Talking Heads and David Byrne with it. Hell, borrowing one of those letter coats from Matthew Lesko would have been better. I'm not saying that's why he got fired. I'm not saying that he'd still have his job if he had a tighter look. But he couldn't have looked any more ridiculous than he did. Here's what I'm getting at. How the hell could that coach have any credibility with that look? Just looking at him on the sideline made it seem like he had no idea what the hell was going on. And then you see his team play, and it really seemed like he had no idea what the hell was going on. So looking the part is key. His look made less sense than benching Eli for Geno. Hell, the more I think about it, the more I talk through it, the more I think maybe he did get fired for the way he looked. And if so, they would have been right to do so. Again, understand that personal appearance is not show fodder. Never has been, never will be, and we're just not doing it. But this guy looked truly ridiculous. As much as people laugh at the fact that baseball managers wear uniforms, they still look better than McAdoo did. He should have worn a Giants helmet on the sideline. I mean, Belichick may cut the sleeves off his hoodies, but McAdoo looked like he just cut holes in hefty bags and jumped in. It matters. How you look does matter. Hey, Phil, I'm going to get to your team. Just know that. I'm going to get to your team, the Chiefs, before too long. Looking for a telephone call. Hey, Windows 10, guys, suspended. I've got new caller software. It's not going too well for me. Let's go to the phones. We go to Los Angeles. Matt in L.A. Hey, Matt, what's up? How are you?
Rome Skillet, hey, thanks for the vine out of UCLA. Are you effing kidding me? Dude, you got three scholarships. Who gets that for three of your kids, and now you're pulling this crap? This could have been a learning moment for this kid. He could have come back as a hero in Westwood eventually. But instead, you are cementing his legacy as Jell-O testicle and yourself as latrine ball. Look in the mirror, big baller brand family. You guys are an abject failure right now other than Lonzo. And you know what? As far as Lonzo goes, man, I got to give credit to that kid. He is a man to put up with this family debacle. Hey, Romy, that's all I got. War lady clones, especially Liz, in Fall City. Outro.
All right. See you, Matt. Thank you. Why do I have a feeling that Matt calling somebody else, quote, an abject failure is going to light Twitter up? Nice use of the word abject. Matt, well done. You think that pissed you off? Wait till you hear this. Hey, James Kelly, go ahead and rack him. Alvin DeLauro has got some crazy, crazy flu working right now. Alvi's like, dude, I'm like on my deathbed here. Yeah, I know, Alvi, but it's Podcast Tuesday, and we're in a brand new studio. What's up, bro? Suck it up, dude. You don't think I want to be there? It's the flu, bro. You got kids. You know what happens. They pick up that crap at school. They bring it home. They gave it to me. I gave it to Mill. We kick it around the house. We all got the flu, bro. It's terrible. We're all literally vomiting all over one another. There's diarrhea all over this house. It's explosive. You know, it makes me think, too, where do you come out of the... I want to hear from a citizen. A citizen who has something against influenza. Flu shot or not, react to me. Do you believe it, or is it a big scam that the drugstores and the doctors are running? I try to get a flu shot. Generally. I haven't done it yet, and now I'm already freaking out like, man, damn, I should have done that. Because I should have known that Alvi would get some cure strain of influenza. Podcast Tuesday, so we're making this thing work. We got a brand new studio and a brand new board. And Alvi's smart like that. Alvi's the only one who got trained on the board. So he's indispensable. So James Kelly and Adam Hawk are trying to run this thing. And we'll see how it goes. Second hour's coming up. I've got Bobby Hurley, who's the head coach at Arizona State. Open phones to open up the top of hour number two. Don't go anywhere. You're in the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. This is CBS Sports Radio.